I'm Zangna Shah. I run a company called Resource Magics Limited. We are doing work on energy efficiency, water, and agriculture. And our strengths lie mainly in policy analysis, compliance, big data analysis, and map-based system, which is GIS-based systems. So with energy efficiency, we work mainly with obligated suppliers and their supply chain, helping them out with their obligations under ECO and WHD. We also do a lot of big data analysis in those areas. And in agriculture and water, we are mainly working on risk analysis. So we help companies to understand risk with their future investments and how their investments may affect water or water-related industries. So that's where we are coming from.
Wow, I could ask you a lot of questions about that, because I find the use of big data quite fascinating, but particularly surrounding risk analysis, because it is very interesting if you get quite, if you understand sort of data forecasting and understand what data sets you've got, you can forecast quite a lot relatively accurately, much more accurately than what you're doing now by just utilizing even existing data sets much better than they have been used in the past, right?
Absolutely. And if you see our website, there are some risk analysis maps that we have produced and put on our website for water and agriculture. And now we are slowly venturing into converting our big data and modeling experiences into online software or online tools that can help people to make more accurate decisions. So that's what we are focusing on in both areas, in fact, energy as well as water and agriculture. So, yeah.
Fascinating. Obviously, I'm here to talk about sort of eco specifically, and obviously I've used your expertise in the past when I worked at various obligated suppliers. So your knowledge in this area is sort of second to none, and obviously you've worked in this area for Ofgem as well. So
yes.
So yeah, probably one of the sort of few authorities on eco if there are such. And it is the case, people don't often realise, but it's been such a niche policy that once you've worked in that for quite a few years, you are one of the sort of leading experts in that, right? It's
Would love to hear that. Thank you.
Well, it's such a niche policy, and you do a lot in it. But it's because it's so niche. You are one of the people that have been in there for a long time. Really.
For a long time, that's true, and that's my background as well. So I did my master's in environmental policy. So policy analysis is one of the key areas I have always been working on, and plus, working as a consultant with Ofgem for a long time definitely helped me to understand how these policies were developed at that point of time, how consultations were run, and what are the things a good policy has to take into account to make it workable for everyone involved.
Yes, and it's interesting to see how Ofgem are sort of moving. I was at a workshop the other day where they were looking at much more sort of real life testing of policies, which is quite an interesting move by Ofgem, I must say, and I think it's probably the right way to go, really.
Definitely, I must say a few of the things Ofgem has done in the past and even doing now are quite remarkable. The way they have brought consumer protection into mainstream. Vulnerability of consumer linked with energy and gas supply, all those changes as well are quite remarkable. So that's how I think an administrator of a market should function, and we must congratulate Ofgem for all those achievements.
No, absolutely. I've had a few meetings with pretty sort of senior people there, and it is actually interesting. I mean, it's a hard sort of transition for them to make, but they are definitely making that transition. And obviously, it's interesting when, they're trying to be much more agile and innovative, but, there is also the downside. If you're a regulator, you can't have the sort of fail fast and fail often kind of motto, because you just can't fail as a regulator. So, they are sort of constrained by certain sort of elements as well, which I suppose people sometimes forget, really.
Yeah, obviously. And I have also noticed that people often blame Ofgem for things which they are not obliged to do, or they haven't got enough powers to control.
Yes, or even sometimes people blame them on the policy, which is obviously not them, right?
No, not them. Even with eco policy, policy is always designed and decided by BASE, not Ofgem. Ofgem is just administering it and interpreting the policy. Of course, when it comes to interpretation, they hold certain responsibilities, but in the first place, they are not the one who are designing the policy. So when we evaluate their performance, we have to keep this in mind and have a balanced approach towards them rather than just blaming them for anything that doesn't work.
No, absolutely. And it's interesting because I do that myself sometimes as well. You know, and I've been in this industry for quite some time. And actually, I sometimes make the mistake to go, oh, actually, that's BASE, that's not Ofgem, right? You know, they sometimes suffer from what's in the industry, you know, like, you know, how you get the messenger, they're sometimes the messenger, right? That they just have
messenger
to sort of...
Messenger gets short. Yeah, that's true. I think that's what is happening with Ofgem most of the time as well, so...
Which leads us nicely into sort of the Eco3 consultation, which has been set by BASE, not Ofgem,
yes.
And that's obviously going to set the future direction of, you know, Eco3 and proposed changes, which Ofgem then has to administer. So... They've recently brought out a consultation, and I saw a post from you on LinkedIn which sort of summarised some of those high-level points. And I wanted to sort of have a brief sort of chat to see, you know, what are some of the high-level proposed changes that you've seen coming out of this BASE consultation?
Sure. So one of the biggest changes that is coming into practice is that from 1st January 2020, it is mandatory for installers to be registered with Trustmark to deliver any work under ECO.
Yep.
The only exceptions to that rule is district heating measures and demonstration actions, which would still remain with Ofgem, and Trustmark registration is not required for them. From 1st January onwards, it is also mandatory that all the non-complex measures, which are all wall insulation measures under floor and room in roof, anything besides those measures would require at least a minimum 2 years warranty. And wall insulation measures already have warranties, but room in roof and underfloor insulations will also require 25 years warranty.
Yeah.
However, we will have time to adjust to that rule till 30th June 2021.
Okay, quick question. Obviously, I mean, throw in politics, but you know, this, it's interesting because obviously this consultation, I presume, I think probably was, you know, pre 31st of October. So we've got Brexit extension and a general election. So,
yes.
I mean, it's unbelievable that from the time, you know, this consultation was sort of answered and you posted your, post, which is October 29th, you know, this is a week later, we've had loads of change in that sort of short space
yes.
of time. So do you still think that's realistic, the timelines that they've set out?
I think the timing could not have been worse
yes.
to implement these changes. And it's not just the latest political turmoil the country is. It's just in general, Brexit, the overall situation of the economy, the major changes we have seen under ECO as well. Keeping all this in mind, this is, in my opinion, this is the worst time BASE could have selected to implement these new changes.
Mm.
I also feel that the latest consultation in August was a missed opportunity by BASE to bring the industry back on track. The number of installations have reduced so much in this phase of ECO, and unfortunately, we didn't see anything that could bring it back to even a little bit of normalcy. So, a lot of things have gone wrong, and we'll still have to see what government comes in power on 13th December, and what would their stand be on.
I hadn't even thought about that. Actually, it's because I posted the other day that Labour pledged, what is it, 60 billion retrofit scheme
per year, 250 billion in 10 years. So that's what their pledge is, which comes out to be 60 billion per annum.
Okay, I sort of must have skimmed that headline. Jesus, that's so, pardon my French there, but oh my God, I mean, that's like 60 billion a year. I mean, if you think you have to use the trust mark for all of that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the interesting question for me would be, what's the process? You know, what does that do? Supply chain, you know, it's some pledge, isn't it?
Frankly speaking, I was in a meeting yesterday where the topic of discussion was the implementation of PAS 2035 and the changes in ECO from 1st January onwards. And the overall message I took from that meeting was nobody's ready.
Okay.
Nobody is ready, whether it's Trustmark, Ofgem, BASE, or even certification bodies. There are still a lot of questions unanswered. There are still a lot of processes unthought of. So how exactly this is going to happen is not known. All the supply chain representatives sitting in the audience, the questions that were coming through them were showing a clear sense of panic and confusion. So even though we are just 7 weeks away, there are questions which are totally unanswered. And unfortunately, there is no support available from anyone to answer these questions or even to approach. There is no FAQ from BASE or Ofgem or Trustmark. Everything is in work in progress. And there are certain areas where I think most certification bodies and Trustmark are not thinking, because they are more related to ECO rather than PAS 2035. So they might be right from their side, but the entire focus of PAS 2035's implementation is mainly through ECO. And so I don't know how anybody can justify not having those answers just because the questions are related to ECO. So yes, there's a lot of chaos right now in the market. And I won't be surprised if we see even significant reduction in the activities in the coming months.
Wow, you think there's even further reduction?
I don't understand how it would happen otherwise. If you see the statistics, the numbers of measures installed every month have reduced significantly compared to what we have seen.
And what do you think? I mean, so what I've learned is there's often not a single root cause, and then often we try to attribute a single root cause. From my thinking, it seemed that a move away from CERT, Cisco, and HECRO to only HECRO is causing some drop in numbers. Is that your sort of thinking, or do you agree with that sort of interpretation?
No, absolutely. And it's just the hypothesis that those who are not on benefits can afford to invest on their own on energy efficiency measures. That whole hypothesis is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
How many middle class families are able to afford measures like solid wall insulation? How many families can immediately change their boilers?
Yeah, also, I don't think there is, so I think there's only a select few that can afford solid wall insulation, and of that, there are only a select few that want to go through the process of getting solid wall insulation, right? Like, who wants to spend £5,000, £6,000, £7,000, £8,000, and then have a number of weeks disruption? That's quite a big ask, right?
Absolutely. And the other hypothesis, which is technically and from building physics perspective is right, but in practical life it doesn't work, is fabric first policy. Entire SAP is based on fabric first policy, and entire PAS 2035 is taking that as a commandment, fabric first.
Okay.
Which, of course, as I said, makes perfect sense from building physics perspective.
Yeah.
But as an individual, if you think, if you have to choose between repairing your broken boiler and installing insulation, what would be your choice? You and your kids cannot do without hot water in the morning.
That's such a good one. I've not even questioned the hypothesis. You know, it's very interesting. I find I like those things where your sort of mind gets blown a little bit. You know, for me, it's like I'd never really questioned the fabric first, because as we, you know, before we started recording the sort of this episode, we talked about sort of having reality-based policy and being based in real life. That's actually, now that you mention that, it makes sense if you sit behind the desk and go, well, actually, we need to address the fabric first, because that's where we have the leakage. But from a practical point of view, no family would actually go, you know what, we're going to spend next month's budget on insulation, right?
Yeah. Even in summer months, we need hot water. And in most cases, the source of hot water is the boiler.
Yes.
In most properties. So if you keep all this in mind, when you design a policy based on hypotheses which are far away from real life scenarios, that policy is more likely to cause disruption and likely to fail rather than being embraced by people and market. Even if people want it to make it work, think logically. For all these years, since the time of EEC till ECO2T,
mm-hmm.
we have insulated, if not 100%, probably 95% of lofts. Most of the cavity wall measures have been done.
Mm-hmm.
The quality is a different question altogether. But statistically, if you see, all those low-hanging fruits in terms of insulation measures have been taken care of. What is left is mainly rows and rows of houses with solid wall construction, rows and rows of houses with single glazing. Now, both of these measures are expensive, but there is no support available. The first consultation, ECO3 consultation in 2017, early 18, literally Bayes's consultation was talking in a way that solid wall insulation actually contribute to nothing, or it was making the contribution of solid wall insulation to almost insignificant level. I would not expect that kind of policy language used by a government department, because that affects the entire market, the attitude of people towards it. On one side, you are discouraging or reducing support for solid wall measures. And on the other hand, you want companies to come forward with innovative ideas under demonstration action to make it simpler and more approachable. So all these things, when you design and when you talk about policy development, are important. And I think we are moving away from this kind of integrated or more challenging policy development, I guess. No, it's just that when you are designing a policy, it's not always going to be easy, because you are talking about millions or probably billions of pounds of investment in these activities, and you're trying to reach hundreds of thousands of households throughout the country. So, there's definitely a gap in our thinking and the way we are implementing these policies.
No, it's interesting, because I worked for a company called Vibrant Energy, and we on our board were the estate agents, Edersell, Connells, it was another one as well, I forgot it now. But anyway, we sort of looked at the Green Deal with sort of high hopes and expectations, because obviously once you have estate agents, people move from one house to another, and that seems to be a good sort of trigger point to say, hey, you know, at that point you might want to think about solid wall. You know, you're negotiating with a new homeowner, you know, and you might want to look at support at those sort of critical points. You know, it's going to be 8 weeks before you move in. The homeowner that's moving out doesn't care too much about disruption, because they're moving out anyway. You know, that kind of thing could become part of a negotiation, or that could even become a policy trigger point to say, we need to do something about solid wall properties. Nobody wants to pay that money, but once you move into a solid wall property, You know, you need to ensure that it becomes insulated or something along those lines, you know, again. Mm. But, you know, you have a clear sort of trigger point where, as you say, to persuade a household to do solid wall insulation and, you know, have disruption and cost is a very different ask, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And
as far as solid wall is concerned, I think Scotland has a lot to teach rest of the countries in the UK. Scotland,
did they have a
Scottish
what?
Government, Scottish government has this program called HEAP.
Yeah.
And under that program, Scottish government promoted insulation of thousands and thousands of solid wall properties. It has been a very interesting and successful project, and I think the entire country can learn from it.
I actually think when it comes to any energy efficiency in the last energy efficiency program in the last 5 years at least, I've always looked at Scotland with envy. Indeed. Because I think they've been really pragmatic and really Absolutely. Effective in their policies.
So I think we have missed on all those good points and good examples to learn from. Some of the things we are reintroducing under this new after this new consultation in ECO, if we had looked at what happened to similar practices in the previous versions of ECO, we could have avoided them. Unfortunately, we are spinning the wheel again the same way we used to do it in the past. And I don't know what are we going to achieve through that, except that we'll spend more money in preparing some paperwork and probably without getting any positive outcome out of it. So that's the worry I have with this new rules coming into practice soon.
What do you think will happen with not your sort of big supply chain, your big sort of middlemen, but what do you think will happen to the sort of small SME supply chain when they have to sort of, because I've been slightly removed from the sort of trenches, if you like, and I'm interested. And I don't know if you know, but what do you think the impact would be of past 2035 on a SME supply chain? You know, your father and son, you know, father and daughter kind of outfit, yeah, that, you know, has one or two employees that has been sort of working in ECO, you know, that those that, you know, haven't got the budget to just easily sort of throw that out there. And how is there a lot of upskilling for those guys?
It is indeed. And it is going to be really expensive if they opt for it. Over the last 1 year, I have seen really, really good companies with good quality of work, good work ethics, leaving ECO. Some of the companies I worked in the past very closely are no longer operating in ECO. Unfortunately, they decided to shut their doors rather than getting involved in something that they would not like to get involved. And all I hear from the companies working now is how difficult it has become for them to operate. The costs are increasing substantially, but the rates are still more or less stagnant. BASE has expected the rates to increase to as much as up to 34 pence, which is way beyond possible in near future. However, if you want to continue working, you have to start registration with Trustmark, you have to start paying their lodgement fees, you have to have past 2030 and 2035 sorted under 2019 version. That's another big cost. You have to have your staff trained to become a retrofit assessor and retrofit coordinator. You will require probably a retrofit evaluator if most of your work is falling under risk zone B and C, categories B and C of past 2035. So there's a lot. And plus, it's not ending there. You will also require more admin staff, because now you will not only report your measures to your supplier, but you will also notify those measures first to Trustmark. And if I have understood from what I have seen on Trustmark's website, there's no bulk upload facility. So probably you'll end up setting up each measure individually, answering several questions about that measure before moving on to the next one. So probably you will have one or two people in your staff just doing that if you are a small to medium-sized installer. Imagine someone installing 100, over 100 majors a month. They would require probably an army of administrators just uploading majors on Trustmark. So there are a lot of changes coming, and I think it is going to become very difficult for small or even medium-sized organizations to survive without.
Wow. I mean, so actually, I've got an interesting question. It's so hard anyway. Like every time, you know, I've been out of ECO for a long time, but every time I speak to people, I thought it can't get harder. They say it has gone harder. So the interesting part is over the last few months, I've been talking to most suppliers that will be caught by the drop in the ECO threshold. So when I was in ECO, the threshold was an energy supplier that has 250,000 customers. That dropped to 200,000 customers, and it now drops to 150,000 customers. The interesting thing is that most of those suppliers just have no idea about ECO or the complexity. And I've been to that rogue myself, and it's an absolute nightmare trying to sort of, because you're talking to people within the energy supplier, something completely different. You know, when I was in, I started talking about tons of carbon, and it's just something a startup energy supplier does not look at. You know, they look at kilowatt hours, they don't look at buying and selling energy, they don't look at past 2030 technical monitoring or banking energy measures. So, you know, you're talking a whole different level, and it takes quite a while for a company to get their heads around that.
Yeah.
It takes a long time. So now that sort of threshold is dropping, you're talking to smaller and smaller suppliers, and those suppliers that I've been talking to just literally have no idea about how ECO works. You know, I've had one supplier who emailed me to say, can you tell me where the leads database is? Because they thought Ofgem would supply a database of houses that needs to be insulated, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to explain, you know, and you go to sort of really basic stuff because, you know, that's not what they have to do and it's not what they focus on. So what do you see? Do you see any extra sort of work for suppliers? And, you know, because that's going to be very interesting for smaller suppliers that have never even done it.
It is still not very clear how this will impact suppliers, whether it will increase their workload in terms of maintaining their supply chain. Of course, it is definitely going to increase their workload to find and have a supply chain that can help them to meet their target. But besides that, it is still not very clear whether introduction of Trustmark will actually reduce their responsibilities of compliance or keep it at the current level or increase. However, there were certain things which are definitely going to remain as they were. Trustmark is definitely not going to check eco eligibility criteria and how a customer has met them.
Yeah.
That is going to remain with suppliers. Suppliers may have to introduce more support avenues for their supply chain if Ofgem and Trustmark don't come forward as required, because the scheme is becoming more complex. And there are
it's such a surprise because you know, when I was in it, it was very complex. I've spoken to you before, like technical monitoring was a nightmare for me. You know, I found that sort of fairly complex. To think that it could become even more complex, because, you know, I from SME suppliers that I was talking to back in the day, you know, I know they were sort of tiptoeing around the legislation, you know, being pretty worried, you know, finding, you know, there's conflicts of interest with technical monitoring and, you know, technical monitoring agents inspecting their measures. And, you know, like it was very complex. So to think that it could be even more complex is, pretty surprising to me.
Yeah, it could be even more complex because now we are moving away towards having a system where technical monitoring is centralized and done through Trustmark. Now, we still don't know how that whole system would look and what would happen, but how it will be dealt with when an installer's work to supplier A constantly fails, but the same installer's work to supplier B and C is perfectly fine, and they are passing all those installations with flying colors. what would happen to one particular supplier? Would that supplier be penalized, or would the installer be penalized, or both will be penalized?
Yes.
What would happen to suppliers' obligations if Ofgem finds a fraud case against an installer, but all that installer's measures through Trustmark have been approved? So there are still a lot of practical questions.
And I come to a practical question, and I don't know if you can answer this, but do you know what the balance is between Trustmark and Ofgem? Because, again, when I was working in Eco, it was very much, obviously, Ofgem. Now there's obviously going to be a role for Trustmark. But I presume not everything from Eco gets handed over to Trustmark. So it must be an interesting sort of balance, that.
Yeah, so the changes are certainly reducing the burden on Ofgem,
yeah,
as well as the Treasury to fund the administration of the scheme, because now most of, or all the Trustmark, I would say most of, because BASE must have helped Trustmark to come to this level financially, but most of the Trustmark's functioning would be funded through the lodgement fees. And if they introduce any further other fees in the future on installers. However, Ofgem will still have a significant role to play, in my opinion, because I think Ofgem will remain in charge of publishing eco guidance, supplier progress evaluation, enforcement actions, and administering measures like district heating and demonstration actions. I assume Ofgem will still continue with its role to provide policy interpretation and credit resolution support to stakeholders. However, now that a part of role is shared with Trustmark, there might be some grey areas emerging in terms of credit resolution and fraud prevention. And this is something we'll have to see how those procedures evolve in during next year.
Wow. Okay, so massive changes then.
It's a massive change, and unfortunately, it looks like nobody has enough or thorough idea of how this will be done.
One other question. I was talking to some suppliers, and they were thinking, who do we trade Eco? What do we do with Eco? You know, like new suppliers that are going through the threshold, what do we do with it? Do you know what the long-term direction of travel is? Have you got a sense of that? I mean, it's probably a slightly unfair question, but obviously, there's a lot of investment now, a lot of, you know, for suppliers, there's a lot of sort of thoughts to think about. You know, what am I going to do with Eco? Now, particularly if you're sort of becoming obligated, not this year, but the year after, you know, you're going from, you know, 2021 to 2022, the end of Eco. If, let's say, you're in that position where you could trade your obligation or you could get to grips with it. It makes sense in that case to go, well, actually, we've got 1 year obligation, you know, because it ends in 2022, right? And you're obligated in 2021. The decision to trade an obligation with, let's say, a larger supplier or to set up your own supply chain will be largely determined on what the long term direction of travel is, i.e. in the you know, for the next 4 years, we're going to have another obligation of Eco that suppliers have to deliver. Then, yes, you know, it makes sense. But actually, if, you know, you have... it looks like Eco will be taken away from suppliers and it becomes just, you know, let's say a financial contribution, then it makes sense to trade it away, right? So have you any sense what you think would happen to Eco, Eco 3 follow-on?
Well, in any case...
And don't worry if you don't want to answer it, because it's slightly an unfair question. I'm completely sort of throwing that out to you. So don't worry about that. But it just seems to be like when you look at Eco 4, they're setting up a very large framework right here. So yes, it seems like, okay, that seems to be the bedrock of whatever future Eco will look like. But then the question is, you know, will suppliers look at that? And honestly, don't worry if you don't know and feel you don't want to answer it, because it's I'm completely throwing this out there.
I can't profess what the scheme would look like in future, because that depends on what government comes in power.
Yes, okay.
Whether we are part of EU or not, whether Brexit actually happens, because even that would have a lot of impact on EU, because all these energy efficiency schemes are started under one of the EU directives. So I can't project what would happen in future in terms of Eco 4. However, I can tell you what is my ideal scheme of energy efficiency. As you just mentioned earlier, I am fully in support to taking away this obligation from suppliers and at maximum keeping them obliged to have a, to make a financial contribution towards mm-hmm. any such energy efficiency scheme running. My preference would be again to move away completely from this carbon or cost saving methodology. With DEEM score coming into picture and the way DEEM scores have been used or exploited by base to promote certain things in different ways, they have changed the lifetimes on some different calculations on and those things. I think we should completely move away from carbon and cost savings and focus on the actual need of the properties and households.
Yes, yeah,
middle
yeah.
income groups should be given priorities along with people on social securities, people in vulnerable conditions, and smaller properties which have been totally, totally neglected in eco and previous schemes should get higher weightage. Measures like glazing and solid wall insulation should get more priority. So this is how I think an ideal scheme should look. I can't go into detail of how the measures would be financed or anything, but I think if you link them with your property valuation, with your council tax, and that we get councils involved, the result is likely to be far better and significant than the current model.
Yeah, you're getting onto one of my sort of pet peeves here. It's, you know, we've got eco, we've got a warm homes discount, and, you know, they're sort of broadly looking at the same categories of,
people,
vulnerability, yes. And then on the other hand, you've got the DNOs, the network operators, looking at fuel poverty networks extension scheme. So they have to connect a household that's fuel poor connected to the gas. Now, the interesting part is that operates completely in silo from eco, but it's brought in line with the HECRA criteria, essentially making it quite hard to sort of find those households. But, you know, the worst part of this is that you then have Fuel Poverty Networks Extension Scheme. They find a person that's off gas. Now, they might have qualified for eco and they might have had loft insulation because they didn't have central heating, right? And, you know, they get the loft insulation done. Mm. But obviously, because they were off gas, they didn't have any central heating. So now the Fuel Poverty Networks Extension Scheme finds them, qualifies them, connects them to the gas, and then goes. You know, and actually that a household could have done with first-time central heating, which possibly could have been done through eco. Again, you know, that wouldn't be 100% funded, but you just think that actually, if you look at it much more holistically, that there's a much better proposition there than just, you know, trying to find, you know, find a household and trying to do whatever suits, you know, your narrow obligated interest, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need a complete makeover of the schemes and we need a more integrated way of dealing with these things. Like the current consultation reduced support for boiler replacement to half, but there's no additional support declared for renewable heating systems. If you reduce the support in favor of achieving your zero carbon targets, then why doesn't it make sense to have more support for renewables to achieve the same target? So there are big loopholes in the current policy, and unfortunately sometimes we take the ostrich approach that if we hide our head under the sand, everything will be fine.
Yeah,
the cyclone will pass and we'll save ourselves. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen. Right now, with all these disintegrated policies and approaches, we are wasting more money and time than anything else.
Yes, no, very interesting. Finally, sort of final questions. Do you have any sort of final thoughts on the ECO3 consultation? What do you see sort of the big, you know, impact? Impact being any sort of final sort of thoughts on that really?
I am frankly speaking a big skeptic about how these changes will make anything better. I have been talking to a lot of people lately about the current changes proposed and what their thinking is and where they are in terms of preparations and everything. And the general feeling I have seen is of chaos and skepticism. Most of the people have absolutely no idea how they are going to do that. However, they understand that if they want to survive, they'll have to adapt to it. But how it is going to help consumers, with a report produced by someone called Retrofit Coordinator, who is technically less capable than an installer himself, is not clear. How warranties would support customers' rights when they are not insurance-backed? Whether there will be sufficient warranties available in the market from 1st January to cover non-complex measures. I know GDGC is one of the warranty providers who are going to be ready with it, but would there be more options available to installers to buy from others? We don't know that yet. There are certain measures which are not going to be recommended under the current assessment report of past 2035, like broken boiler replacement. How would that be taken care of? We don't know. There are a lot of questions unanswered yet. And unfortunately, we are just 7 weeks away with Christmas on its way as well. So I feel that there is going to be a huge gap in delivery for the first few months of the scheme. And that will have a very negative impact on the supply chain. It would be sad, but not surprising or shocking to see people losing their jobs in the first quarter of next year. Wow. Under ECO. So I really, really wish someone can prove me wrong in next year, but unfortunately, I can't be more optimistic about this whole change, and especially the way it is being implemented at the moment.
Fascinating. Well, so it's going to be a big impact on supply chain, then. That's it's a sour note to end on, but hopefully we'll be proved wrong, really.
I really wish, but the fact is, even if you want to get your past 2019 certificate now, and if you think you are ready to spend and you are ready otherwise, your certification body might not be ready, because most of them are still going through the upgradation of their certification under past 2031-2019. So there's this 20% uplift offered to installers for early adoption of 2019 version, but it is still possible that they still have to wait for several months before they can actually start working under the new requirements. And as I said before, there doesn't seem to be enough support to cater these questions or in any other way.
Fascinating. It'll be very, very interesting to see what happens then. I might have a follow-on, at the end of first quarter of next year to see what the impact has been and what your thoughts are on the future, really.
Definitely. I'm going to keep a close eye on it, because even our future is partially relying on ECO. So
yes,
let's see what it brings to us.
No, absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your time. Very, very much appreciated.